compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show, where we take a 21-hour break every day just to catch our breath, but we are back now. Thank you for listening. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. I'd love to hear from you. And as per usual, this is a full-service program, so you may have a question about apologetics. It could be, God topic, certainly. Maybe you need a second opinion. Perhaps there's a situation that you'd like to, get some advice maybe. All those kinds of things. I'm here for you, and my number is toll-free. You don't have to pay a penny. Just call me at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Also, I mentioned to you yesterday that I'm broadcasting this week from Florida. And so I am, the last couple of days, including today, I've been broadcasting from beautiful Orlando, Florida. And those of you who know Florida, you know what a charming and delightful place this is, especially when it comes to the weather. And I want to send a big shout out to all of the devoted, faithful, Relevant Radio listeners who turned out in force by the hundreds last night at Blessed Trinity Catholic Church in Orlando, where I was privileged to give a talk on the topic of why be Catholic. And it was great for me, as it always is, to get a chance to meet you and see you in person and shake your hands. And I think most people were wearing masks. Florida's a little bit different, though, Cyrus. I don't know if you spent any time in Florida. I think you did, right? A few weeks ago, you were down here?
I was. Now, where are you again?
Orlando.
You're in Orlando. So I've never been to Orlando.
Yeah. Well, I think it's pretty representative. I mean, I was in Fort Myers a month and a half ago before that, and then Naples further south. And so my perception is that Florida is much more wide open, much more, people are just much more close to normal when it comes to COVID, compared to some other places where I've been, where seems like things are far more restrictive. So I found it very pleasant, and it was wonderful. And oh, by the way, Cyrus, Nancy and I were talking about this after the event last night. I'm telling you, Nancy told me this, and at first I thought, oh yeah, that's kind of funny. But she said, no, seriously, are you ready?
I'm ready.
She said that at least three people over the course of the evening, I said, how many is several? She said, well, three. Three people suggested to her that we go on the road and do events, you and I, because people want to see Cyrus. They want to hear from Cyrus.
That's silly.
I'm serious.
That's nice.
No, and they're asking questions about you. You have a cult following. I don't know if you realize that.
that's ridiculous.
The cult of Cyrus. It does sound sort of like an ancient Egyptian cult, right? The cult of Cyrus.
I like the sound of that.
Yeah, don't get too many ideas. Right. But I told Nancy, I said, give the people what they want, and if they want public events that involve Cyrus, the Patrick and Cyrus show, or it may become the Cyrus and Patrick show.
Nope. I'm the behind the scenes guy. This is as far as you're dragging me anywhere. But I would love to be at an event with you, like the one you're in Orlando right now. I would like to just be in the crowd and
like a face
attended.
In the crowd?
I think it'd be a face in the crowd.
Yeah. Well, I mean, anything's possible, but I thought you would enjoy hearing about that. And that was last night. So once again, lots of beautiful love going out to all of you Relevant Radio listeners and supporters who turned out at Blessed Trinity Catholic Church last night in Orlando to hear my talk. I really appreciated it. And I'm looking forward to the other events that are coming up. In the meantime, though, I have got a ton of emails, Cyrus, that we've been sitting on, and I haven't had a chance to really get to as much as I'd like to. So I want to start the show that way, which is somewhat different from how we normally do it. The number is 888-914-9149. This one comes in from Marie. This one really made me stop and think, and I said a prayer after I read this letter from Marie the first time. She says, "Hello, Patrick. I'm miserable. I'm 69. And I have been married to an abusive husband for 40 years. I never once called on him and yet lived in fear for myself and my children. Finally, they were able to leave and live their lives. I was brain dead. I lived like a robot the way he trained me, trying not to upset him, even though that didn't work. I prayed every day of every year for God to fix his anger problems and to help us, and nothing happened. life continued the same. 2 years ago, it's hard for me to even get through this letter. 2 years ago, he threw me into the living room wall, picked me up and threw me over the sofa, picked me up again and pulled me by the hair and threw me to the door of the bedroom and slammed the bedroom door. I thought I was going to die. I sat in depression for a year after that until 2 weeks before I left. I asked God a different question. Should I stay, Lord, or should I go? I was in the kitchen again when my husband came from downstairs telling me I had thrown away some items because he couldn't find one, and he was walking toward me like he did the last time. I walked out the door and unconsciously dialed 911 and hung up. The phone rang, and it was the police. I said, "Who's this?" And they said, "It's the police, ma'am. Do you need help?" I said, "My husband's going to kill me tonight." I was so nervous. Two police cars came and suggested I leave for a while. It was 11 at night, and I drove 3 hours to the house of one of my children. I never went back again. I filed for divorce, and over a year later, I'm still waiting for it to be finalized. I am sick with worry about the Lord being upset about the divorce. I wonder if this will affect me getting to heaven. I'm a lifelong Catholic and still love my husband, but I will be 70 next year, and there is no way for me to live without a divorce financially. I'm struggling every day financially and living off a credit card. Please, Patrick, respond to me and tell me if I failed in some way in my marriage. Pray for me, please. Thank you, and God bless you for all you do. Oh, Marie, I want to tell you how much my heart goes out to you and breaks for you because of all the abuse that you've suffered at the hands of your husband. What a terrible thing, and it's utterly inexcusable. And no, to answer your first question, at least going on the things that you mentioned in your letter, no, you did nothing wrong. No wife deserves, no woman deserves to have that sort of horrible treatment, to be physically beaten, physically attacked on multiple occasions just because he's angry. So that would be my first answer to your question. No, you didn't do anything wrong. Now, only you and your husband know if there were things that could have been done better. We all bring our own faults and failings into a marriage, even the best of marriages, with the exception of that of St. Joseph and the Blessed Virgin Mary. As for the rest of us, we're all frail human beings, some more than others. So it's to be expected that there will be some faults on both sides over the course of a marriage. But with regard to this, there's nothing that you could have done that would ever have warranted in a million lifetimes him treating you so terribly. So to that point, I would say no, you didn't fail. Now, as for God being angry with you, ask yourself this question. Why would he be angry with you? I can tell you, I think I can speak pretty confidently on this issue, that God is not angry with you, nor would he be, because you simply were trying to escape from the violence that was being inflicted upon you. The only reason that God would be unhappy with you would be if you were intentionally doing something that you knew in your heart was wrong. We call that sin, of course. But what sin did you commit? You didn't commit any sin. You had to get away from this thug of a husband who was beating you up at the drop of a hat. And God forbid your statement to the police about how you thought he was going to kill you that night. God forbid if things had turned out differently. I don't even want to imagine that. So no, I don't think it would be at all the case that God would be unhappy with you for simply trying to survive and get away from this craziness. Now, obviously, divorce is never ideal. And often it's the terrible choice that's made on the part of somebody who's abandoning the marriage because, you know, in the case of a husband, for example, because he wants a younger model wife or because he wants his quote-unquote freedom or whatever. I mean, there are a lot of reasons why some people, they ask for a divorce, and it's a bad thing because they're abandoning their marriage. But it seems to me, I'm not a marriage and family therapist, but it seems to me from where I stand that your husband had already abandoned the marriage. That he had abandoned you, and he was treating you with this violent reaction. It's irrational and it's unacceptable, obviously. So there are two. I don't see anything here that would suggest to me that God would be unhappy with you, because what else are you going to do? Stay there and get pulverized and worse, perhaps? No, I don't think so. So you did what any normal human being would do, which is to seek to get out of that violent situation. I don't fault you for that. I really don't think that God would fault you for that either, for the reasons I mentioned. Now, last thing I'll say is, your circumstances are different from those of many people who do seek a divorce because, as I was saying earlier, they want a different spouse, or they want to start dating again, or they want to, you know, some of these ideas that people get in their heads and they walk out of their marriages on. You didn't do that, first of all. And the thing is, you're just trying to get along. So for you, the divorce, and I don't know what the civil requirements are, and I don't really know how the laws would work where you live, and whether the divorce paperwork therefore would allow you to be taxed less, or I'm not sure how the financial end of things works. But by all means, I mean, if you're just barely making ends meet and you're surviving on a credit card, which is not really surviving because eventually those bills come due, and if you're struggling every day financially, and the only way to make it, to have enough food and rent and such, is to technically be divorced, even though you're not planning on remarrying or anything like that, there again, I don't see that there's anything wrong with that. Certainly not in a moral sense. So the last thing I'll say, in addition to hopefully giving you this encouragement, I hope that you feel encouraged by it, but I sure hope that you've got some friends and maybe relatives that you can turn to who can help you with getting some therapy. What you've been through suggests to me that there's probably a lot of therapy work that would be helpful to you. You know, I don't know if PTSD, post-traumatic stress syndrome, I don't know if that's something that you're dealing with. I wouldn't be surprised if it were. But I would encourage you, if you don't already have some people in your life who can help you financially, perhaps, yes, or if nothing else, just help you get situated so that you can plug in with some counseling. And your local diocese will have a charitable office in the diocese that may very well be able to help you with that, perhaps even at no cost. So get in touch with your diocese and find out if that's an option. Well, I don't really know how else to say how bad I feel for your situation. And since you only just recently sent me this email, I'm hopeful that in the near future that things will begin to get better. But I'm hoping that this, you know, these few thoughts of mine will be helpful to you and encouraging. Thank you. God bless you. Man, I can't even imagine. Can you even imagine that kind of insanity going on in a home, especially with a woman of that age, approaching 70 years old, being thrashed by her husband? I can't imagine it. I can't imagine it.
What I don't even know what word to call a man mm-hmm. like that, or man.
I can think of a few.
Yeah, I can.
I
meant on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, I can think of a few words.
Yeah.
But,
It's, God help it's unfortunate him. This kind of violence happens in a family. It's mm-hmm. heartbreaking.
To say the least.
Well, hey, we're mm-hmm. going to be praying for her here.
Could you make sure that this gets on to Drew Mariani's
list? That's exactly what I was just writing down here. So, yeah, hopefully I'll see Drew today and I can tell him in person. But if not, I'll have a note here that I'll email him.
Okay, that'd be good. Yeah, let's get her on our prayer list. And all of you listening, in your kindness, if you just would just remember her and remember her situation, what she's gone through. She's shell-shocked. She's super tight on money. She's living on a credit card. That can't go on indefinitely. So there's lots of improvement that needs to happen quickly. So we'll pray for her. Thanks for that, Cyrus. 888-914-9149. Here's another email. This one comes in from Stephanie. She says, I'm not Catholic. I'm Orthodox, but I listen to your show daily and appreciate your wisdom, etc. I learn a lot from you. Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm working in a country that has a limited number of churches, so my options are limited. I went to Good Friday Veneration of the Cross at the Catholic Cathedral for the first time in my life, I actually left a church without staying, because while I have always felt the presence of Jesus and the power of the Holy Spirit in the Catholic Church, This one actually gave me a weird feeling. I hope you can help me understand if there is a legitimate basis for this or if it's just my overactive imagination. The first thing that bothered me was that it was quite bare and somewhat tomb-like. She's referring to the cathedral. There was also almost no art, no crucifix or pictures of Jesus. There were small and rather modern art-style pictures of what I assume are the Stations of the Cross on the side, but nothing at the front of the church except two white, colorless statues off to the side. One of the statues, I believe, was of St. Joseph, but the more prominent one was of Mary with two or three sheep. I found it disturbing to see a depiction of the Blessed Virgin carrying the sheep as if she was being portrayed as the Good Shepherd, who, as we know, is Jesus. I have been to many Catholic churches in my life, and I have never seen either such a barren church or such a depiction of the Virgin in that way. The thought crossed my mind that maybe she was supposed to be bearing the Lamb of God and bringing him to the world, but she had more than one sheep. So I don't think this was the artist's intent. Does this seem at all odd to you? And that's from Stephanie. Okay, wow. First, let's posit this. Your reaction to what you saw, especially with this drastic minimalism and the lack of any real adornments or Catholic signs or symbols, the Catholic images, etc. I would say part of it, just take this into account, part of it is that in the Eastern churches, the Orthodox churches and in the Eastern churches in union with the Catholic Church, there is typically a profusion of color, the icons, they're written all over the walls and the ceiling, and it's just a riot of beauty and the symbolism of Jesus and Mary and the saints and the angels and all these things. And because that kind of beautification is so common in Eastern Orthodox churches as it is in the Eastern churches of the Catholic Church, I can see why, coming from that background, it would be especially jarring for you to go into a church that is, as you say, so tomb-like. So that's one observation. Second observation would be, I don't doubt for a minute that the church that you're describing, I've never been to it, but I don't doubt for a minute that it probably is exactly as you described it. And that's a symptom. It's a manifestation, might be a better word for it, of a heresy. Believe it or not, there is a heresy that the Catholic Church had to fight tooth and nail, and the Catholic Church won, as it did eventually with all the heresies that attacked it. And this heresy was known as iconoclasm. And it was decisively defeated in the 8th century. St. John Damascene was one of the premier defenders of traditional orthodoxy in that, and by orthodoxy, I'm not referring to Eastern Orthodoxy, but the orthodoxy of the Catholic Church with regard to images, both images that are painted on boards. And I know technically that it's called writing icons. I understand that, but we're not talking technically here. So images of Our Lord and Our Lady and the saints and the angels painted on boards. So two-dimensional icons, as well as three-dimensional images, statues, etc. And the church recognizes and came to recognize more and more over the course of the first several centuries that there's nothing whatsoever wrong with these representations of these heavenly personages. But yet there persisted in the early church a notion that this was akin to blasphemy. And since the Second Vatican Council, or let me just put it this way, before the Second Vatican Council, by and large, going back to about the 8th century, the prevalence of iconoclasm was pretty rare. You didn't really run into it. It wasn't lurking the way it is now. And at the time of the Second Vatican Council, Stephanie, there became this resurgence of people who wanted to strip the altars. They wanted to, what we sometimes affectionately refer to as recovate, churches. They would renovate them in the name of renovation, and they would rip out the beautiful altars and the beautiful adornments, the statues, anything that was traditional, they would just rip it out. I saw a picture. I was in a church, I think it was in New Zealand, if I'm not mistaken. It was either in New Zealand or Australia, and they proudly had these pictures in frames in the vestibule with the before and after pictures of the renovation of this beautiful church. Well, at least it was beautiful before. And one of the pictures that's framed right there for everybody to ooh and ah over shows an utterly devastated interior of this church with a bulldozer, literally a bulldozer, right in the middle of the church. They literally, and I'm using the word literally in a literal way here, they literally bulldozed the altar and the side altars, etc. Now, don't get me started, because this makes me angry. But that is an example of the sickness of iconoclasm, where we can't have any images, we can't have any representations, none of this angel stuff, none of these statues. We don't want anything frilly. We don't want anything that's, and all in the name of, well, we want to honor God, so we eliminate all of these other things. And that's theologically wrong. And I'm afraid that that's very likely what you ran into in this cathedral that you're referring to. So I'm sorry that it went the way it did. I don't think that your perception of things was off, especially since you come from a background where it's rich in signs and symbols of the Catholic faith. All I can tell you is maybe next time you go to the veneration of the cross or mass for that matter, maybe go to a different church, because that extreme level of iconoclasm, the iconoclasm, by the way, means breaking icons or smashing icons. And I had thought we were over that, but it has made a comeback. So let's smash the iconoclasm again, as St. John Damascene once did, and maybe we can get back on track and people will go back to the beauty of the signs and the symbols. I'll leave it at that. I have to take a break. The number is 888-914-9149. I'm going to be coming to your phone calls on the other side of this break, and we do have some lines open, so why don't you grab one? Call me, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149, and wait till I tell you who's getting in on the action when it comes to being a place for COVID shots. You won't believe it when I tell you who's going to be giving their facilities over to giving COVID shots. I'll tell you about that right after this.
It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on.
That was a hard email to read. I think it was hard for you as well to hear it. In fact, I'm seeing some comments on Twitter. Cyrus, I think we even had a phone call too. What was the phone call? Somebody who called in about Marie's letter?
Yeah, and they were touched by it, and they actually were wondering how they could send her money to help her out.
Yeah,
it was just a beautiful testament to the listeners that we have.
Yeah, I'll say it's just, I read a letter, if you just tuning in now, you didn't hear it, from a lady named Marie, about to turn 70 and married for many years, and a physically violently abusive husband who just thrashed her many times and just got to the point where she left and had to file for a divorce because she was certain that he was going to kill her. And she is worried that God might be unhappy with her, because she sought refuge away from this murderous maniac of a husband. And I shared with her my encouragement that, no, God is not angry with you for that. Why would he be? Cindy Gonzalez on Twitter, she says, Patrick, prayers for the woman in the letter you read. Unfortunately, I was married to an abuser who held a knife to my 2-year-old daughter's neck, who said, I can only hurt you by hurting her. I have words I'm thinking of, but I'm not going to say them. The police said if I didn't leave, my daughter and I would be leaving in body bags. Van, whom I met last night at the event here in Orlando that I spoke at, thank you for attending last night, Van. She said, I lost my mom due to domestic violence. So, you know, this is obviously something that happens maybe more frequently than we would ever want to imagine, but it does. And so just as a reminder, please remember Marie in your prayers. She's hurting. She's desperate. She's getting by on a credit card. And yes, I wish we were in a position where we could say, okay, here's how you can help her. But there's no feasible way to do that, unfortunately. But you can obviously pray for her. And all the other women like her who are in similar situations, pray for them. I know it may sound like it's trite. Well, just pray for them. Yeah, but prayer really does work, and it is powerful. So I wish we had some way to facilitate people helping financially, but we don't. So thank you for all of you who have suggested that. 888-914-9149. Okay, before we go to the phones, I want to make good on my promise. I told you that I didn't think you'd be able to guess who it is that's getting in on the immunization vaccination action. And actually, somebody did guess it. This is, who was this person? Let me find, it was on Twitter. Just came in a minute ago. It was Carlos. He says, Patrick, let me guess. The death machine planned to parenthood. I think what you mean is Planned Parenthood. Well, you got it. It's just so ridiculous. Planned Parenthood announced a $2 million... That's right. We need the mood music. And this is Planned Parenthood mood music, just to get you in the mood to talk about that. Planned Parenthood announced a $2 million English and Spanish ad blitz to promote COVID-19 vaccines at their Death Star Killing Machine abortion centers. So they want people to pack into these abortion centers and get their COVID shots. And I'll bet they really are hoping that they're dispensing the COVID vaccine, in this case, AstraZeneca, that is tainted morally by the connection with aborted fetal stem cells, in a way that the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines are not morally tainted, per the U.S. bishops. So here's how it's being explained. This is courtesy of LifeSite News. America's largest abortion company is launching a major campaign to distribute COVID-19 vaccines and to convince people to get them. Planned Parenthood announced a $2 million English and Spanish ad blitz to promote COVID-19 vaccines to at least 1.5 million people, on top of the campaigns to distribute shots through clinics and mobile sites in five states. The launch comes 1 week after the Biden administration named the group to its COVID-19 Community Core program. Let's get the abortion people in on this. Why not? Because they're great. And we give them like $1 billion or something like that. Maybe it's only $500 million every year of taxpayer money. Planned Parenthood affiliates in Minnesota, Montana, New York, California, Washington will be vaccinating people in abortion centers, deploying mobile clinics to rural and lower income areas, and running pop-up vaccination sites. In Washington, Big Abortion is deploying vans to supply coronavirus shots to Central American migrant workers, according to the outlet. Cyrus, what are the odds that when they get these folk in there with their sleeves rolled up to get their jab, what are the odds, do you think, that they won't also start trying to talk to them about their other services?
It's called an upsell.
Oh, that's right.
And it's exactly what's going to happen.
That's right. Yeah. Would you like fries with that?
That's right. Yep.
Hey, here's your jab.
I shouldn't be laughing.
Here's your jab. Mm-hmm. And you guess what else we can do? You look pregnant.
Yeah.
Are you pregnant? Because if you are, we've got another product. We have another service.
Oh, you know, that baby's going to probably ruin your life. But we can take care of that here.
Oh, yeah. We've got a pop-up van or a pop-up tent. Whatever the pop-up thing is. They probably would take them in the van. Or we'll drive you down to that clinic over there. And guess what? It doesn't matter if you're here illegally or not, because the government will pay for it. Win-win. Win-win lose, because obviously the baby loses because the baby dies. But boy, is there money to be made. Hand over fist, there is money to be made. And don't get between Planned Parenthood and their money.
Pure.
Trust me on that.
Evil.
Yeah. So, of course they want people to come to their clinics to give them the jab, because there's all kinds, like you said, they can upsell. The COVID-19 vaccine program recalls Planned Parenthood's sordid history of racist medical campaigns aimed at ethnic minorities. In the 1930s, as part of the organization's years-long eugenics-rooted Negro project, that was their term for it. That was Planned Parenthood's term for it. So if you're mad, get mad at them. Planned Parenthood ran mobile contraception clinics throughout the South to suppress black birth. The group still disproportionately targets black and Hispanic customers for abortion and contraception. By the way, Margaret Sanger, she was an avowed racist, an avowed eugenicist. She referred to racial groups, and by that what I mean is basically all non-white people, as human weeds. Those were her terms. That's what she called Hispanics and blacks and others. Undesirables. She used those terms. She described them. She gave speeches. She wrote articles. Because back in those days, in the 1920s and 30s, you know, people were not bothered by that. Strangely enough, but many of them were not bothered by that. So she could get away with that with impunity. And now, of course, Planned Parenthood tries to pretend that none of that really existed. But that's their legacy. From 2018 to 2019, Planned Parenthood killed at least 354,871 babies. These are unborn babies, trafficking in many of their organs, and has become one of the largest suppliers of devastating experimental hormone blockers for minors. Healthcare services provided by Planned Parenthood have fallen off precipitously at the time, with cancer screenings listed as only 6% of all the services in the group's latest annual report. Planned Parenthood officials have admitted that the move is an attempt to boost perceptions. A Planned Parenthood affiliate told Politico, "Hopefully years in the future, someone can look back positively on their experience getting a vaccine through us. We're reaching folks who might not otherwise have thought of Planned Parenthood as being able to provide services such as these." It kind of reminds me of maybe the commandant of Auschwitz during World War II saying, you know, "Hopefully years in the future, someone can look back positively on their experience at getting a vaccine through us here at Auschwitz. We're reaching people who might not otherwise, they might not otherwise have thought about coming to the Auschwitz death camp to get a vaccine. But hey, we did it. We provide services." To me, it's just like that. It'd be like telling the local German population, "Hey, come on, you know, yeah, okay, right. We do, you know, murder Jews. You know, but hey, it's legal. It's legal. And El Presidente de Alemania, de Germany, the Third Reich, he says it's okay. And if he says it's okay, and if it's legal, and if the courts say it's legal, then, you know, forget about all that. You know, shut up. If you don't like it, shut up. But yeah, we do the, you know, we do the gas chambers thing, and we do the cremation of dead bodies thing, and we do starve these people to death. We do that, yeah. And, you know, we'll bayonet them and machine gun them and all those things. You know, they're Jews. Don't forget. So yeah, we do that. But we're hopeful that you can look back in years down the road and have a positive memory of coming to our Auschwitz death camp. You know, if you can put up with the stench and the dead bodies, you know, and we're going to give you a nice inoculation. And we're hopefully you'll be able to look back and think about how great it was that Auschwitz was able to give you this service. That's what this is. That's exactly what this is. Except the dead bodies are not on display. You don't see them because they dispose of them. I want to get off this topic, Cyrus. I hate this entity. I don't think it's going too far to say I hate what they represent. I hate what they do. And I wish that God would intervene in some way and change the hearts and minds of people so that they would stop doing these terrible things. We have people waiting on the phones. 888-914-9149 is the number. I think we're going to go to Joel in Watertown, Minnesota. Hi, Joel.
Hi, Patrick. I have a question for you. I was having a discussion with a person about the Eucharist, and I pointed out to them that, you know, there's been miracles performed that the Eucharist has actually changed the flesh. Mm-hmm. And they said, "Oh, that's just the devil playing a trick on us." My question is, can the devil actually do that or not? I didn't think he could.
No, the devil can traffic in cheap imitations. He can't perform an actual miracle. He doesn't have the power to do so. And the devil is often, or has been often, referred to as the ape of God. Now, it doesn't mean ape like a gorilla or, you know, some simian creature. It, ape as in the mimic of God. So the devil tries to mimic God, and he will try to do things that seem like they're miraculous, but he doesn't have the power to do that. So let's take the classic example of the miracle of Lanciano, in Italy. And this goes back to the, I believe it was the 7th century, if I'm not mistaken. So yeah, we're still in medieval times. We're still in medieval times. And the miracle of Lanciano took place where a Basilian priest was celebrating Mass and he was experiencing doubts about the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist. And what happened was the host in his hand became human flesh. Now, at the time, there were no scientific instruments and really no science to speak of with which to evaluate that. Only many centuries later, when we had the ability to understand these things, did we determine that it was human flesh. It was actually a cross-section of the heart muscle and the various nerves and the sections of the heart that are in the cross-section are all present. They know the blood type, etc. And that has remained flesh for all those many centuries. Now, the devil can't do that. So when your friends poo-poo it and say, oh, that's just the devil, I think that's really their own ignorance speaking. And perhaps you could just share with them, there are books on Eucharistic miracles. Just do a little Google searching and you could find them. They have photographs. They have the documentation of the scientific studies that were done. They have all of the pedigree for these Eucharistic miracles that defy scientific explanation. And there are countless numbers of them. The miracle of Lanciano is just one of them. So that would be my suggestion as you deal with their objections to this. I appreciate the call. Thank you. Cyrus, I think, is Vikan in Rome? Is he ready now?
Yes, he is.
Okay. Vikan in Rome, welcome to the program.
Hello, Patrick. Hello, Cyrus.
Hello.
Hello, can you hear me?
I can. You're on the air. Let's welcome.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hi, Patrick. Hi, Cyrus. How are you guys?
Great. What can we do for you?
Yeah, so I had a question that regards the integration of persons who suffer from dissociative identity disorder.
Okay.
Yeah, so what I wanted to know is, you and I both know that by virtue of natural reason and by divine revelation, that every human person was created with a single and indivisible eternal soul. Yet people who suffer from DID genuinely believe that they are a material system which incorporates one or many different altars, which, you know, personally, I believe this metaphysical expression to be blamed on René Descartes, you know, poop on him. Anyway, so I have two hypothetical scenarios. Hypothetical A, if someone were to come to me as a future priest, God willing, and they request to be baptized, but they disclose the fact that they suffer from this disorder, what is the proper way to proceed? Hypothetical scenario B, if a Catholic...
Let's stick with A for the moment, just because I will forget if we go too far. So in this first hypothetical, you are a priest, and you are evaluating them for what? For a man who wants to be a priest?
The first one is... if I, as a future priest, come into contact with someone who wishes to become Christian, to be baptized, but they suffer from this disorder, so they believe that they are many different persons, how would I proceed with this scenario? Because
right, I see. Okay, so in that scenario, you could certainly baptize that person. There's no reason not to baptize them. That's assuming that they wanted to be baptized. Now, if they're understanding their perception of their own self was deeply flawed, that would not be an impediment for them to receive baptism validly. So you could baptize them. And, you know, obviously this is a clinical disorder, so I don't mean to suggest that people who suffer from this disorder are possessed by the devil or anything like that. But the prominent exorcists whom I have read their books and listened to interviews and things, they indicate that sometimes the devil's interference with somebody can mimic the forms of mental illness. It can mimic the characteristics of a mental illness. And so there are times, according to the exorcists, when somebody is exorcised or even just receives the sacrament, in this case of baptism, that it actually may quell those problems that previously were considered to be psychological. Now, I'm not saying that most of the time it's not psychological, but sometimes it could be. So I wonder if baptism might not help heal somebody who is more being afflicted by the devil than having an actual clinical disorder. Okay, so what's the second scenario?
Yeah, so a second scenario is that if a Catholic man believes that he has a vocation to the priesthood, would Holy Mother Church be able to accept him into the priesthood?
No, that would be an impediment to holy orders. Mental illness is one of the impediments to holy orders. Now, there are circumstances where it can be transient and not something that's permanent. But in the case of a permanent mental illness, that would be an impediment to holy orders. And so the man, I know it would be a sad situation perhaps, but he would not be an apt candidate for holy orders, because in order to be an apt candidate, you have to have the suitable qualities, which include physical health, mental health, etc. So this would be a disqualifier.
Mm-hmm. Now, would this be this disqualification? Would it be on part of the church's decision and their prudential judgment, or is this ontologically impossible?
Well, the ontology of the human person is something that the church is really clear about. But a mental disorder does not affect the person's ontology. So it's a misunderstanding of one's own self. It's not a real phenomenon. It's the person's confusion about his own self. Fascinating questions, Beacon. I'm really glad you called, and thank you for listening from Rome. God bless you. I'll be right back.
Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Keeping it relevant. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back. This is the Patrick Madrid Show. My number is 888-914-9149. We have lines open, so feel free to call 888-914-9149. Got a nice little note here from Joseph. He says, "Hey, Patrick, greetings from the other side of the media industry. Thanks for connecting." This is on LinkedIn, I think. "Your content is truly some of the most impactful on my journey back into the faith and fighting it out here in Hollywood. In Christ, Joseph." Joseph, thank you. I appreciate that. A lot of people get in touch with me on LinkedIn and Facebook, and they may wonder, how come he never responds? I send him a nice note and he never responds. I'll tell you, here's the real reason. Is I very rarely go on those platforms. I'm on Twitter all the time. You can find me there. You can easily get in touch with me and I'll interact with you. I'm happy to do so. But please don't take offense if maybe on LinkedIn you send me a message and 6 months go by because maybe I didn't see it, I didn't log in for a long time. So that's all that is. The easiest way to reach me, just go to the show page, relevantradio.com/Patrick. You'll find everything there. Let's see. Let's go now to Abraham in Madison, Wisconsin. Good morning, Abraham.
Good morning, Patrick. Twice I went to a mass, the same priest, where he ended up running out of hosts at communion time, the Eucharist at communion time. And he went into the tabernacle, like normally priests do, and they have already consecrated hosts in there. But in these two cases, he took hosts out of a bag, like maybe they come in that way, and he just keeps them in there for when he needs them. But he actually took them out of the bag and then distributed the rest of the people with those. Mm-hmm. Now they were in the tabernacle, but were they consecrated?
I think almost certainly they were consecrated, yeah. Because the only reason that any host would be put in the tabernacle is if it is consecrated. So all the unconsecrated hosts are in the sacristy, and there are probably some in the rectory as well. But there's a place in the sacristy where they're kept, and then once they're consecrated, they go in the tabernacle. And the only hosts that go in the tabernacle are those that are consecrated. Now, I could see why maybe the fact that they came out of a bag might cause you to question that. But I would reiterate the fact that if they're in the tabernacle, they were put in the tabernacle, and the priest certainly knows enough to not put unconsecrated hosts in the tabernacle. It's very possible that if he didn't have a ciborium with an airtight lid to put over the hosts to keep them fresh, then keeping consecrated hosts in a plastic bag, which is not what I would personally do. If necessary, I would buy another ciborium. But that could be why they were in a bag. It may have been that he wanted to keep them fresh, and that was the only way that he had to do so. It seems like he could have done it in a ciborium, but let's assume the best. I think that's almost certainly what happened.
Okay, but this was a completely unopened bag. You actually open this bag like you buy something from a grocery store and you open up the bag.
Well, you didn't tell me that.
Exactly what you did.
That part you didn't tell me.
I apologize.
That's okay. Well, that adds a level of complication there, because naturally, if the bag was unopened, then it would seem almost unavoidable that they had not been consecrated. So if that's the case, and I suppose it could be, then that's an extremely bad situation. And we would have to figure out, was that negligence on his part? What was going on there? But at the very least, if those were unconsecrated hosts that were being mixed in with the consecrated hosts, that's an extremely bad problem, because now you have people who are adoring a piece of bread. And in the case of an unconsecrated host, it's all it is. It's just a piece of bread. And so you've got material idolatry taking place. It's not the fault of the people, because they didn't know. And in good faith, they thought they were worshiping Jesus, when in fact they were worshiping a piece of bread. So that, if in fact it was the priest's own fault, and he was putting unconsecrated hosts in the tabernacle with the consecrated hosts, and then distributing the unconsecrated hosts as if they were consecrated, and he knew that, that would be a grave sin on his part. And it's the kind of thing that the bishop should be made aware of.
Okay, I personally know this priest really well. He's a really good friend, so... would you recommend me talking to him about that?
Yeah.
Bringing that up to him?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
I will do that. Thank you very much, Patrick.
You're welcome. Yeah, thank you. It's, what can I say? It's just, it'd be a bad situation. That's why I was trying to look for the way to make this not a bad situation. But when you mentioned that the bag was unopened, that changes everything. We'll leave it at that. 888-914-9149. We'll go now to Chicago to talk to Michael. Good morning, Michael. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Patrick.
Hello.
Hey, I had a question about masks in church. And just a disclaimer, I'm not saying COVID's not real or anything, but I'm young, I'm healthy, I want to go to church, and I don't want to wear a mask. And I know a lot of people who feel the same way as me. If the church is turning me away because I'm not wearing a mask, then they're not letting me be in communion with God. Isn't that, and there's a bunch of verses I can bring up, like when Jesus says to Peter, you know, you're concerned with God, with earthly things, you know, not heavenly or godly things.
Mm-hmm.
Or, well, there's all kinds of verses, but how is that not denying my soul on account of saving my body? Because the reason they're not letting me in without a mask is they're concerned for my health, for other people's health. But that's the health of my body. That's not the health of my soul.
I get it. I understand where you're coming from. So I'll say a couple things. Number one, I think that there's a tendency to an over-exaggerated precaution footing in many parishes where they go overboard, and it's over the top and it's unnecessary. And I mean, I've even seen pictures of priests with a mask and then a plastic face shield on top of that and plastic gloves. I mean, it's way exaggerated in many cases. It's beyond what is necessary to do the right thing. But you should humble yourself, if you ask me. Humble yourself, swallow your pride, put your mask on, go to Mass and receive our Lord and Holy Communion. If that's the price of admission, if that's what you have to deal with, that's nothing. It's nothing. And it would be good for you to mortify your pride and to not insist on your own way and to be humbled and to do something that you don't particularly want to do. And I could understand why you wouldn't want to do it. I'm not negating the point that you're making about that. But what's more important, for you to get your own way or for you to be able to go to Mass and receive Holy Communion? I think we both know the answer to that. So my advice would be, God will sort out the bishops and the priests, and he will deal with them. And if there's malfeasance or negligence or, you know, hysteria or what have you, he'll deal with them. But he'll also deal with you. So my advice would be, humble yourself, put the mask on, mortify your pride, go to communion, and you'll be better for it. That's my advice.
Okay. If it's not a pride thing, if I see that it's genuinely something that's being wrong.
Yeah, I don't know what else to say. That's my take on that issue. I would say the same thing regardless. Give it a try. Now, you may thank me for that later. I'll be right back with more right after this.